College football crowned its national champion, and UVA and Virginia Tech's basketball teams are struggling. We'll talk about all that and a whole lot more this week on Teal and Barber. Welcome to episode 130 of Teal and Barber, our Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite pods. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and joining me as always, my co-host, the 14-time Sports Writer of the Year, and the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, Mr. David Teal.
Mike, who has it better than the Harbaughs?
Yeah. For
at nobody.
At the moment, things are going quite well. Now, it was a little rocky start for Jim Harbaugh, and we'll see what the NFL playoffs have for his brother John. But for a night, at least, the Harbaughs are college football, NFL football royalty, and impressive what that family's done. And you know, it's funny. I always think back. I had a chance to meet Jim Harbaugh at Virginia Tech. He came to Logan Thomas's pro day, and he was there. A lot of coaches obviously were there for that one. Chip Kelly was there, and there was this young fan who snuck his way into the Beamer barn, even though it was supposed to be a closed thing. And he was kind of hounding all the coaches for autographs and trying to chat them up. And Harbaugh was the nicest to him. I mean, he talked to the kid on two separate occasions, kind of hung out with him. And then we heard Jim say that he would say, well, why don't I send you a hat or a jersey or something? And the kid said, oh, yeah, great. And the kid took Jim Harbaugh's scouting notebook and started writing his address just in the middle of Jim's work and his notes. That will always be, it may be more than this national championship, what I remember from Jim Harbaugh.
Too funny. I remember him from when the Hokies played his Stanford team in the Orange Bowl.
And didn't cover the tight end, right?
Correct.
Tech fans probably would like to forget that. David, before we get too deep into the sports talk, it's a big week for the podcast because both of our wives celebrate birthdays this weekend, Elizabeth on Saturday, Jill on Sunday. I believe they're both turning 21 this year. For Elizabeth, it's not the first time I think she's turned 21, but we certainly didn't want to get into the business here without mentioning them because they make, I know everything I do possible, and I know it's the same over in the Teal household.
100%. And I actually think we're gonna celebrate by taking a trip to a college basketball game this weekend. The whole family's gonna go.
How perfect! Where are you headed?
I think we're gonna go to Harrisonburg and see the Dukes. Yes, they lost on Saturday at Southern Miss and fell out of the top 25, which I'm not sure I understand. You lose your first game of the season. It's a conference game on the road. You were 19th, I think, in the polls, and you get punished that badly. I mean, they didn't even sniff the top 25 this week.
Yeah, I thought that was an overreaction from voters. For the record, I vote in the football poll. I don't vote in the basketball poll. But yeah, I thought that was an overreaction. I thought they would drop a little bit, but like you said, with their resume, with the win over Michigan State, it felt like voters were just waiting for an opportunity to dump them, which is strange because I think that's not just a flash in the pan, not just an exciting start. I think that's a quality basketball team. They're the preseason favorites in that conference, and I think they've backed it up here early on.
No question. They come back home. They play South Alabama Thursday, and then we will see them play App State on Saturday.
You know, maybe we should join you. JMU is Elizabeth's alma mater as well.
There and, you go, man.
I took the weekend off.
But I haven't been in the new building, so I'm eager to see it.
I was there for the game where they beat UVA. And when I worked there, people always told me the stories of the Electric Zoo and how the convo was back in the day. And I never got to experience that. There were some good convo games when I was there, but not quite Electric Zoo level. But I'll tell you, you know, that arena, the way it's laid out, the way the fans are into it right now, it's a exciting home venue.
Mike, for the record, the Electric Zoo originated long before the convo at Godwin Hall.
Yeah,
when I was a student.
Well, David, we hit this in the open, but college football, it has its national champion. Michigan kind of ran over Washington in the national championship game Monday night. Certainly, Michael Penix, the outstanding quarterback from Washington, looked pretty beat up, pretty sore,
Ooh,
and really gutted through that game. And I thought Michigan did a surprisingly good job on their trio of great receivers, not just Roman Odunze, but that is a great receiving core. Michigan, the way they ran the football, the way they defended, they really left no doubt. You know, there had been talk of, what would the voters do if Florida State had beaten Georgia? Obviously, there were all the opt-outs in that game. And, Michigan left no doubt. Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines, they were the best team in college football this year.
Absolutely. I mean, 15-0, and you survive Alabama in overtime in a memorable Rose Bowl. And then 34-13 last night. At least I thought at halftime, Mike, Michigan had dominated it so much, but yet when Penix throws that late touchdown pass in the second quarter, Washington's within a score at halftime, and you're wondering, wow, did they survive Michigan's flurry, and might Washington really make this a game in the second half? But they were helpless on offense after intermission.
And Washington's track record, right, has been close games, pulling out close games time and time again. So if you're a TV exec, you were okay with Michigan with the early lead, Washington hanging around, because I think, educated viewers, and I like to think you and I fall in that category, I think we were thinking, okay, this could set up for a great finish. Whoever wins, Washington is a team that knows how to play in close games and won't go away. But to their credit, and Blake Corum, what a great comeback story, he is. And Blake Corum and that running game, that offensive line, just made sure that Washington never was able to fully get back in it, to never really threaten.
And you mentioned Penix at the start. He was banged up, his ribs, his ankle. And Mike, he just flat out missed some throws too.
Yeah,
he had a Dunze, that one throw, wide slam open for a touchdown. And there's no reason to miss that throw. And he overthrew him by a good bit.
And I will say, if you've ever tried to play a sport with a cracked rib, I played football with a cracked rib. I was a receiver and I got the giant flap jacket. And the reality was I couldn't get open or catch a ball anyway. So I probably wasn't going to have any impact on the game that I played hurt that way. But when you have a rib, it is hard. The pain is everything you do. And so I do wonder, and certainly he wasn't going to make any excuses. And I watched, his post game interview, and he, it wasn't making excuses, but you do wonder if there wasn't that tinge of pain every time he pulled that ball back. And then, because he did, he missed some throws that we just have not seen him miss. It kind of reminded me of Virginia's win over Carolina, where Drake May just missed some throws that you were like, well, geez, it's a different game if you do what you normally do. But he could not. Michigan did what it normally does, and really impressive. How will you remember, though, David, this Michigan national championship? Because this is a year that started with Jim Harbaugh being suspended three games for recruiting violations. The regular season ended with him being suspended three games for the sign stealing scandal. You have the controversy of Florida State not being included in the field. How will you remember the 2023 national championship?
Just how remarkable it is to think that Jim Harbaugh did not coach half the regular season and they still didn't lose a game. And in rare was the instance that they were pushed in a game. They were that dominant, that good. And I think we'll have a better feel for how we remember this championship season when we learn Jim Harbaugh's future. Is he going to the NFL? Is he walking away from his alma mater, which people who know the situation far better than we seem to think that he will. They think that he is NFL bound. And does Sharon Moore then become the new head coach, who the offensive coordinator who distinguished himself so well when Harbaugh was out those last three games, especially the Penn State one and the Ohio State one, to the point where he's earned himself a chance at the job?
Yeah, it's interesting because there's two schools of thoughts among, I have a number of friends who are Michigan fans, and one is, hey, we can get a more established coach than Shrum, right? But the other is, Jim Harbaugh built something that looks sustainable. And the fact that, just what you said, that he missed six games and they still won, I think that points to, okay, he has built something that's more than him on game day and him adjust. Like, so I would dance with the one that brought you. I wouldn't change horses midstream. I know those don't exactly fit because Harbaugh's the one who brought you and Harbaugh was the horse. But, if I'm Michigan and Harbaugh does, and then there's two schools of thought on this too. Is Harbaugh just eager to get back to the NFL? His brother's coaching there. It's the highest level of football. Or is there an element of getting out ahead of the posse here?
Yes.
With the sign stealing scandal? I think that will play, like you mentioned, into how we view this. I think back to that Florida State national title, not the last one, but it was Sports Illustrated, right? That had the cover of a tainted title and called them Free Shoes University. And that's something that sticks in our memory. Will this be, the sign stealing Wolverines, or will this just be a juggernaut that went undefeated and ran its way to a national title?
I think more likely the latter, simply because they played their best football late in the season when clearly sign stealing wasn't a thing. And it makes you wonder, why were they going to such ends to steal signs when they were already so much better than everyone?
Yeah, I'll be curious too when that's all adjudicated, because we say sign stealing had come to an end. The active practice, obviously, of going out and
yeah,
kind of, but what information had they already gathered, right? What opponents had already been scouted? Would they have been crazy enough to use that information down the stretch? The whole thing seems crazy, so who knows? But if you're looking at football, if you're looking between the lines, Michigan, wildly talented, wildly impressive. Some great stories. I mentioned Corum and J.J. McCarthy with his meditation and a very deserving and impressive national championship. David, it's the last one of this four-team playoff.
Yep.
I think most people say good riddance. I'm one of those in between. I love the eight-team playoff. I don't understand why that wasn't the way to go. At the time, five Power Five champions, a group of five champions, two at-larges. 12, if you look at this year's rankings, I thought there were eight or nine teams that I would have liked to see compete for the national title. Were there 12? I don't think so. Again, it's fine. You're more inclusive. It's more exciting for fans and whatnot. One, will you miss the four-team playoff? And two, how on board are you with the new format?
I will not miss the four-team, although it was an upgrade from what we used to have. I mean, at least college football, albeit kicking and screaming, was dragged into the playoff mode. I mean, for years we had the BCS and the Bowl Alliance and just one game that was allegedly determining the best team. Now we'll have 12 teams that have a crack at it, including one, at least one from a group of five conference. And with the demise of the Pac-12, it's likely to be the five highest rated conference champions and seven at larges. What I am most looking forward to in the 12-team playoff is first round games on campus sites. I think that's going to be awesome. And I wish they would take the quarterfinals to campus sites and just reserve the semifinals and the final for neutral. But college football is so beholden to the bowls, for better or for worse. But those four first round games at campus, they're going to be just perfect. And yeah, I don't care how bad the weather is.
No, football is supposed to be played in bad weather. And I'll tell you what, the NFL, they play everything but the Super Bowl in home sites, and nobody's complained. The Super Bowl is the biggest sport. So I'll tell you, and we won't go down this path right now on this episode because it would take, but I have in my spare time, because I'm a nerd, one of the things I had worked through is, what if each team could designate a bowl as its home game for the semifinals? Every Division I program pick, okay, this is the game that our fans would go to, could travel to, is the either by proximity or by tradition, whatever it is. And that would be, now it would be too in flux for it to work, right? You couldn't suddenly tell the Orange Bowl, oh, you're hosting a semifinal this year. Yeah. But I thought it would be fun if you could have that kind of a scenario where the quote unquote home team, the higher seeded team would say, okay, we'll still be in a bowl, but this is our bowl if it's home. And obviously logistically that would be quite the nightmare. But again, I'm with you on there ought to be some home field, because having fans and being on campus is the best case because of the atmosphere, right? We've been to bowl games that had great atmospheres, but we've also been to bowl games that the town or city you were in, sometimes the stadium you were in, didn't seem to know the game was happening, and the playoffs deserve better.
Yeah, think of it this way, Mike. Yes, the top four seeds in the 12-team model will receive first-round byes, and that's a just reward. But they will never host a playoff game. So chances are Tuscaloosa, Athens, venues such as that, they won't see a first-round playoff game because likely if they're in the playoff, they're probably going to be an SEC champion. So it's just, those fans deserve a shot at it too.
Yeah, it is interesting the way they've almost taken away the home field advantage from the best teams. But, but again, it's going to be a while before we get to anything that resembles perfect with this. But as you mentioned, right, going from nothing to the BCS, to the four, now they're going in the right direction, albeit at the pace of the snails that clean my fish tank. But they are moving that direction. Well, how about Virginia basketball, David? Because it's moving maybe in the wrong direction. We were both there in Raleigh this weekend, where they took another lopsided loss away from home. Quality opponents away from JPJ are just hammering Virginia, not winning, hammering them. After the game, I asked Tony Bennett and the players, is this a team that lacks that competitive fire, the heart to fight back? They don't believe so. So, David, what is at the center of the issues here with Virginia basketball?
Mike, after the Louisville game, which obviously the Cavaliers won at home earlier in the week, Tony Bennett spoke of an immaturity on this team, which he attributes to youth, and that on nights when the shots aren't falling, they lose the will to defend. And that's what's, in his words, that's got to stop. And it hasn't yet. And until it does, they are going to struggle, especially on the road. And the crazy thing is, and I thought Bennett was very subtle in mentioning this after the Louisville game in his news conference, because it was unprompted. But it's a weird quirk of the schedule that Virginia is in the midst of playing ACC road games on seven consecutive Saturdays. And Saturday is when teams usually draw their largest and most enthusiastic crowds. So for seven consecutive Saturdays, at Notre Dame, at NC State, those two are done. Saturday, at Wake, at Georgia Tech, and at Louisville, you should be fine. And then at Clemson and at Florida State. Those are some hard games, man, especially the one coming up at Wake.
Yeah, believe me, as the father of two young children, I'm acutely aware of all of the Saturday road games on this schedule that are taking me away every weekend. And it does present a challenge. They are inexperienced. All that said, David, they have two potential NBA draft picks in their starting lineup in Reese Beekman and Ryan Dunn. They have a player who is excellent offensively and is improved defensively in Isaac McNeely. They have had some struggles figuring out the other pieces. Jake Groves has been really good at times, has disappeared at times. Andrew Rohde, only a sophomore, was a star as a freshman at a lower level last year. He hasn't quite gotten going. They didn't get much at all from the bench this past game against NC State. They got 8 points from the bench, six of those from Jordan Minor in garbage time. David, I went into this year praising the construction of this roster because I thought all the pieces really went well together. And I'm not ready to say I'm wrong, but here's what has happened in my eyes. Jordan Minor, who was recruited to be the starting center, has not panned out.
Right.
That has moved Jake Groves, who was recruited to be a stretch four, into the five spot. It is completely jumbled roles of what they envisioned. So while I give Bennett and his staff credit for putting together a roster that conceptually would work really well, offensively, defensively, one piece coming out, and Jordan Minor, now looking at it, you can argue, was the most important transfer because of the way things have sort of, there's no other option there. Blake Buchanan, the freshman, is just simply not ready to be the 28-minute, 32-minute starting center for this team. It seems like this well-thought-out, well-constructed roster maybe ended up being a little house of cards-ish in terms of Minor not panning out, everybody else moving a little, and it hasn't looked right.
Tony Bennett had a kind of a throwaway line late in his news conference Saturday, where he said, "We're still looking for the right personnel." Man, it's early January, but it's getting late to be searching for the right personnel.
And he's also clearly holding out hope, because he also mentioned, he said, "Hey, I thought Jordan Minor gave us a spark late in that game," which I thought was a little silly, because Minor came in at garbage time when they were down by 21 or 18, I think, when he checked in. He did some things that were fine, but I read it as Tony Bennett saying, "I'm not giving up on you, Jordan Minor," because I think he knows that unless they have that piece, this team is average. There is still plenty of time, certainly, to figure things out, to turn things around. I think what you started with is the key. If they commit defensively and become a traditional Virginia defense, they will still grind out games and finish in the top part of the league and be an NCAA tournament team. But if they cannot find that defense, there is no path, in my eyes, for this to be successful.
That's why Dante Harris needs to get healthy.
Yeah, and they have dealt with. You know, Dante Harris has been out longer than they anticipated with this ankle injury. It's a high ankle sprain. Those can be funny. They thought he was on his way back right around the holidays, and that has not happened. He's doing more in practice, but they could use Harris back. They could use Minor contributing. They could use Buchanan emerging. They could use McNeely being a little better with his ball security. You know, his shooting's fantastic, but he had three turnovers against State. So there are things you can point to that should be fixable, but can Tony Bennett and his staff fix them in time? And I think we've got some similar questions in Blacksburg, and we'll talk about that after the break. Thank you for listening. And remember, you can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite pod. So, David, we asked the question, how worried should we be about Virginia basketball? Let's head a little further southwest in the state and say, how worried should we be about the Hokies?
Similarly, tough loss Saturday in Tallahassee, down 8 late, rally to tie it, and then a late foul on Sean Padula sends the Noles to the line where they close it out. Again, and Mike Young talked yesterday on the ACC Zoom with us about, some rebounding and defensive issues that they had Saturday against Florida State. And you're going to have rebounding issues against a team with that kind of length and size, as Leonard Hamilton's teams traditionally have. But it's still, to me, Mike, they are not the offensive team that folks have become accustomed to seeing in Blacksburg under Mike Young, and frankly under Buzz Williams as well. Their ball security is not good. Their three-point shooting is not up to their standards. And those things need to get fixed starting tomorrow night at home against a Clemson team that, frankly, is one of the most talented in the league, but comes in having lost two straight, albeit against quality opponents in Miami and North Carolina. But, it's both those teams are not desperate, but that game at Castle tomorrow night is going to feature a couple of teams really getting after it, because they know the consequences of losing and getting too far behind in the standings.
Now, Virginia Tech very well knows that, because each of the last two seasons under Mike Young, it's gotten off to disappointingly slow starts in conference play. Now, a couple of years ago, they were able to turn that thing around all the way. Last year, that didn't happen for them. Some of this certainly is the schedule. Certainly, it is early on. David, is there a reason, you think, behind slow starts in ACC play, or are these three or four different teams that we're looking at with this trend?
Yeah, I think with different teams, different personalities, I don't know that there is a common thread there. But man, it's really, and let's not forget, Mike, that yes, 2 years ago they did turn it around, but they only got to the tournament because they won the ACC tournament improbably by winning those four games in as many days in Brooklyn. Absent that championship, had they lost to Duke in the final, they're out. They don't even make the field. So you don't want to have. You don't want to go to DC in March and think, okay, we got to win 4 in 4 days or we're going back to the NIT.
Yeah. And with the struggles of Virginia Tech and Virginia, we may need to go. I may have to go back and rethink my booking. I don't think I was planning on being there Tuesday. You look at the standings and you wonder, could one of these teams slide into a Tuesday game at the ACC tournament?
Tuesday seems still unlikely. Wednesday, very possible.
I'm just assuming one or two will be there Wednesday.
Right now, it's looking like both of them would be playing Wednesday.
But I'm wondering who that final team that gets stuck with Tuesday is. And I could certainly see scenarios where one or two of ours are in the mix there.
You can see the scenarios. But that would be rough.
Sure would. And would be rough on our budget. Well, we're talking there about the bottom part of the ACC. David, let's talk a little bit about the top of this league, where, you know, the team that I've been beating the drum for all preseason, despite the fact that they're going through injury woes kind of similar to the NFL team in that city. But the Miami Hurricanes, playing without Wuga Poplar, with Norshad Omir beat up, with Nigel Pack beat up, the talent they put on the floor, the versatility, especially with the addition of Matthew Cleveland. How impressed are you right now with Jim Larrañaga's bunch?
It's a really good team, Mike, that needs to get better defensively and that is always going to be worried about rebounding because they're just not very big. And this is a big man's league this season. So there will be nights where that bites them in the backside. But if you're just looking at sheer offensive firepower, the two teams that played Saturday at Joel Coliseum, Wake and Miami, they might be as good as it gets offensively in the league. And that's with all due respect to Duke and Carolina.
You know, it's interesting. We're Duke and Carolina, obviously so much of their fortunes rest with young players. They bring in the top recruiting classes in the conference every year, and those guys become stars and often carry them. Now, I know John Shire talked about shifting to a little bit less of the one-and-done model and trying to have, I don't know that you'll ever call Duke developmental, but having some guys who are in that program a little bit longer. We're 10 weeks into ACC basketball. David, we haven't yet had a Duke or Carolina player win ACC Rookie of the Year. Does that tell you that their young players aren't progressing as quickly, aren't as ready, or does that tell you that there's still another gear for those teams that people should be very worried about them hitting?
I just think it tells you, Mike, that neither has won a Rookie of the Week award because they're not as dependent on those guys. Is that, you know, when you've got RJ Davis and Armando Bacot in Chapel Hill, and you've got Jeremy Roach and Tyrese Proctor and Kyle Filipowski and Mark Mitchell in Durham, you don't need a freshman to go out there and get you 20 in back-to-back games.
And what a different model than what we've seen in recent years from those programs. So at this point, and when there's a lot of basketball left to play, if I gave you an old WWE-style tag team wrestling and tell you that the ACC champion is coming out of one of these two tag teams, I'm giving you Miami and Clemson or Duke and Carolina, the Blue Bloods against the schools maybe more known for football. Which pairing do you think is going to give us the ACC champion?
Duke and Carolina. Are you talking about regular season or tournament?
Let's say regular season. I'm trying to get to who you think the best is, and I know the tournament can get funky on people.
Yeah, so it very much can. I would say Duke or Carolina. I think Duke overall is the most gifted. When everybody's healthy, I still think they're the best.
You mentioned Wake Forest, David, and I didn't include them in that four, but how good is Wake? How big has the addition, the waiver granting for Efton Reed, the fact that they still don't have Monsanto in their lineup, how good is Wake and how good can they still be?
Well, if Damari Monsanto comes back, I mean, that's just another three-point shooter among the best in the league for Steve Forbes to add to his quiver. And man, they could be, they're already a chore to guard. You know, they're unbeaten in the league. NC State's unbeaten in the league. You didn't mention them either. We just saw them on Saturday. State Carolina play on Wednesday, which is, you know, we're recording this Tuesday morning, so tomorrow night we get to watch State and Carolina, that's a heck of a game. Wake goes to Tallahassee tonight. Very curious to see that game. But Steve Forbes working his portal magic once again.
Okay, so if we like Miami and we like Clemson and we like Duke and we like Carolina and we like State and we like Wake, how do we feel about the ACC this year?
I think they're going to get more than five teams in the NCAA tournament, which is what the number has been each of the last 2 years. And, you know, the non-conference wasn't great, but it wasn't as poor as it has been. And to me, the eye test tells me that the league is better. And I think it will show on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think the six teams that we named are our NCAA tournament teams. And there's a host of ones that I wouldn't give up on. And I would include Virginia in that group. So,
yes.
David, beyond the ones we just mentioned, if I told you one other team makes the NCAA tournament beyond the six that we just talked about, who do you like best to kind of save their season here and still be playing in March Madness?
Well, beyond the six, I would say Virginia, because we talked about the Big Four in Carolina, Clemson, and Miami. So to me, the logical next team would be UVA.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And again, one, Virginia needs to put it together, but I hate to say this, I feel like even if they don't fully put it together, they can still get there. The schedule isn't brutal. They have that reputation. They are unbeaten at home. Now, they're going to have to win some games on the road, but they are undefeated at home. And it feels like even if it's not pretty, even if it's not a juggernaut, this team can get there. Virginia Tech's outlook, where do you put them in those rankings?
Yeah, in that 8 to 9 range. You know, I like them better than BC. I like them better than Georgia Tech, than Notre Dame, than Louisville. But yes, still some work to do. Padula seems to be getting healthy. But Lynn Kidd had a rare down game Saturday at Florida State. I think he'll be better. Mike, you mentioned the Hokies. But before we close, I think we owe a shout out to Kenny Brooks and his bunch. You and I were texting after that game on Sunday. Wow, what a finish between the Hokies and previously undefeated NC State. The way they came storming back from 11 down in the fourth quarter, first regular season sellout for a women's game at the Castle. And wow, what a play Kenny Brooks drew up in that huddle with 1 second and change left.
Yeah, and if they weren't already, that sellout crowd is in love with Liz Kitley now, as I imagine many of them probably were before, but just another feather in her cap for what's been a remarkable career. And David, that, you know, we know what that team did last year. And there was a sense, while, you know, you're always down when you lose, that, hey, next year could be special, could be even more special, could be beyond games like the one they just played Sunday. And to have that kind of moment, those sometimes are the games that send you on to something special.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Kitley, and she made the last shot. But Georgia Amore took over that fourth quarter. She set the screen that freed Kitley for that last shot. And Kayla King with the inbounds pass. I mean, that's a hard pass to make because you're on the opposite side of the court. You're being guarded. It's not like they just let her throw it in unimpeded. And to loft that perfectly over the defense into the waiting arms of Liz Kitley, who then flicked it through. Everything had to be perfect. And Kenny Brooks said afterward, they've practiced it a bunch.
Yeah, it was a fun ending, a fun atmosphere there at Castle. We hope today was fun for you. Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the Times-Dispatch. You can find special promotional offers available at richmond.com. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and richmond.com. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe. Happy birthday to our wives, and please join us again next week.